Dear listeners, Sai Ram and welcome once again to Vahini Satsang. So we are now in chapter 11 of Sandeha Nivarini. And if you look at the journey of reading and understanding the beautiful messages that Bhagwan has so lovingly written for us in Sandeha Nivarini, chapter by chapter, Bhagwan is emphasizing on certain concepts that are fundamental to spiritual understanding, that are fundamental for anyone who wants to be on the spiritual path. In chapter 11, Bhagwan began by explaining the concept of Asti Bhati Priyam, and Swami said that is what is Sat Chit Ananda. Swami always used to say that, yes, I am God, but you are also God. If I am Sat Chit Ananda, you also are Sat Chit Ananda. And Bhagwan started explaining how the whole world is permeated with Asti Bhati Priyam. If we get rid of the name and form, then what remains is only Brahman. And that is Asti, that is Sat. The intelligence which understands this is Bhati or Chit. And that which experiences this is Priyam or Ananda. Asti Bhati Priyam Sat Chit Ananda. And when the devotee asks Swami, why is it that we are not able to experience this? And that is when Swami says, it is because of several obstructions, obstructions of the past, obstructions of the present, obstructions of the future. The obstructions of the past, Swami says, can be got rid of if we learn to look beyond the name and form. The obstructions of the present, Swami said, are of four types. Attachment to sense objects, cynical criticism, dullness of understanding, and absurd conceit. In the previous session, we spent some time understanding what are these obstructions of the present and how could we overcome these obstacles. We will continue that journey today. Let us listen to what Bhagwan has given us in chapter 11, the second part, 11.2. And then we will spend time assimilating what Bhagwan has written for us.
Now I know what is meant by the obstruction of the past. What are the obstructions of the present?
Good, I shall tell you. The obstructions of the present are of four types. Attachment to sense objects, cynical criticism, dullness of understanding, and absurd conceit. The first is the case of attachment to objects that attract the senses. The second makes men discover wrong meanings in the teachings of the Guru. The third causes confusion because things explained by the Guru are not grasped at all. The last obstruction makes one feel that one is a great scholar, pundit, or ascetic, mistaking the body and the senses for the Atma.
And what are the obstructions of the future?
Oh, they come always through sinful deeds. They come and obstruct unawares.
How are we to meet them, Swami?
It is not possible for all. The sincere aspirant can to some extent know of the approaching sinful deeds with certainty, which could be in the nature of compassion leading to attachment. This should be recognized as an obstruction of the future. It is difficult to be forewarned like this as the result of the effort of one single life. it may take many lives to acquire this education.
Are there any who have so learnt it?
Why, there are. The scriptures speak of Bharata and Vasudeva. Bharata required 2 or 3 births. Vasudeva had to be born once.
That means these 3 obstructions cannot be known unless one takes many lives. Can we not succeed without all that bother?
Why? The aspirant can, by reasoning out the nature of these 3, escape from being affected by them. Otherwise, undoubtedly, it may take many lives.
So that is segment 11.2 and the obstructions of the future that Bhagwan talks about. They are very interesting and we will come to that in the coming episodes. Swami says that a sincere spiritual aspirant to some extent can know of the approaching sinful deeds with certainty. Sometimes we would have done something out of compassion, but that would have led to attachment. And I think that is something we have to definitely deliberate upon. And when the Bhakta asks Swami, how can we get rid of these obstacles? Do we have to take so many births? Swami says through inquiry, through reasoning out. And the spiritual path is one of constant inquiry. It is a path where we constantly have to be aware of our every act, our every thought, our every deed. And slowly that awareness becomes more palpable. It becomes more a part of our daily life and living once we are on the path. Coming to today's session where we were discussing about the obstructions of the present. So in the previous session, we talked about the obstructions of the present. Cynical criticism and attachment to sense objects. These are the first 2 obstructions of the present. The 3rd obstruction, Swami says, is dullness of understanding. Let me narrate a little incident that happened in the late 70s in Vrindavan. The Sri Satya Sai College at Vrindavan in Bengaluru was set up by Bhagwan in 1969. And with time, a hostel that could accommodate 300 students came up in the ashram compound. And next to this building, there was a similar structure. It was called Essencing Block. And this building was largely unoccupied when Bhagwan was there in Vrindavan. When Bhagwan was physically not there in Vrindavan, it was always empty. When Bhagwan was physically there, then it would be used temporarily by some sevadals or some other people who had come for darshan. Though this building looked like the hostel building, it was almost on the face of it like the hostel building. But it was largely empty. Now, one of the students who had joined the hostel way back in the 70s was from the metropolitan city of Mumbai. And given his upbringing and the kind of life that he had led, he was very disinterested with everything in the hostel He was used to a very flippant lifestyle. He was very used to the flamboyant ways of living and the simple lifestyle that one has to lead in the hostel. The spiritual routine did not appeal to him. But even as this was happening, one day, Bhagwan looked at him straight into his eyes. And it was such a piercing look. Somehow, something within him altered. That one look of Bhagwan changed something very, very drastic. Within him, his perspective changed. And that is the power of an avatar. That is the power of the Supreme Master. And especially when he's there in the physical form, he can do things which perhaps might take lifetimes for us to achieve. He will just do it in 10 seconds, in 2 seconds. And that day was one such life-changing day for him. And from that moment, somehow, he started becoming very serious about spirituality. Until this moment, he abhorred anything spiritual. But now, he started becoming curious about spirituality. And just like it happens with anyone who is new on the path, you want to experiment and you are full of enthusiasm. So in a moment of that inspired exuberance, he made a resolution. I am going to do meditation from now on. I think it has happened to so many of us, isn't it? We suddenly feel, no, I'm not spiritual enough. Let me start doing meditation. Everyone who is spiritual, they say that he meditates for half an hour. The other person meditates for 1 hour. How is it that they are able to meditate? And they are doing different kinds of meditation. Somebody is doing Nirvana Dhyana. Somebody is doing Jyoti Dhyana. Somebody is doing Tipura Agni Dhyana. So there are so many people doing different kinds of meditation. Transcendental meditation. I should also do meditation. And so since he had no idea about how to do meditation, but he had heard about Bhagwan speak about Jyoti meditation, so he thought he will start with Jyoti meditation. So he knew that one has to concentrate on a flame, and slowly that flame has to come within you. So he had some idea. So he began this process of Jyoti meditation. And as I said, this ascensing block, this building adjacent to the hostel, was free. So he would go to one of those empty rooms there and he will lock the door. He will settle down in one corner. He would light a candle and then he would start his meditation. And when he started initially, the flame was flickering because it's a very empty hall and there's so much of wind there. So perhaps because of this, the flame was flickering and he said, you know, he must do something to stop this flame that was unsteady because he was not able to focus on a light that was constantly not steady. So to stop the flame from waving, he placed a 200-page hardcover notebook and he positioned it like a V behind the flame so that the flame would not be affected by the breeze or the wind around and the flame would become steady. So that is how he would do his meditation, and he started doing it for some time. A few days passed, a week went by, and he was very religiously, resolutely doing this meditation. But he was feeling that, I have done this meditation now for so many days, but you know, nothing was happening. I haven't really got that experience. So many people say, you know, they experienced this, they experienced that. And people who meditate for 10 minutes, they say that they felt like meditating for longer. And there are people who meditate for 1 hour and they don't even feel that they have meditated. And there are people who hear different noises, different sounds. And why is it that I am not able to experience? There are people who experience different kinds of bliss. So he was constantly feeling that, why is it I am not being given that spiritual moment that so many people who do meditation experience? And one day, as he was meditating, so he took the light of the candle to various parts of his body. And as he was doing this, suddenly he started feeling warmer. And a few moments passed, and then suddenly he felt that the warmness turned into heat. So now this whole body, he was feeling that heat, and he had never experienced this before, and he started thinking, oh, is it that experience? Am I on that path? Maybe today I'm going to experience that moment, because suddenly my body is becoming warmer, warmer. Something is going to happen. And he was waiting what is going to happen next. But soon he saw that it is getting not just ordinary heat. It was becoming uncomfortably hot. He thought, my God, why is it so hot? You know? And so when it became very hot, he got terrified now, because he thought something's really gone wrong or what. And he opened his eyes absolutely disturbed. And then when he opened his eyes, what did he see? He saw in front of him a disaster right before his eyes. Because the cardboard, the candle and everything around was caught in flames. He was sitting surrounded by flames and he thought he was having a spiritual experience. And he said, what is this? After weeks of sadhana, what I see is only frustrating cinders of my unfulfilled spiritual heights. And he felt so dejected and he just gave up doing meditation altogether from that day. What's the point? It's leading to disaster. So he stopped all these meditation and all his spiritual practices. A few days went by, and one day he was standing in the portico along with 300 other students. They were waiting for Bhagwan to emerge in the morning. Generally, Bhagwan would spend some time with the boys. He would joke at someone. He would gift something to someone. He would inquire about someone's parents with a boy. He would ask some confounding question to someone before he goes out to give darshan. And always that would happen. The boys would be inside. Swami would come out, spend some time with them, go for darshan. And the boys would wait for Bhagwan to return after giving darshan to the devotees. And those are the moments which the students always longed for. There would be boys who would actually vie with each other to grab a fragrant green creeper with the flower that grew on the arches, because they wanted it to offer to Bhagwan. And many times Swami would smell the flower, would smell that creeper, and Swami would return it. So on this particular day, something different happened. Swami suddenly looked at this boy and Swami said, hey boy, come here. So when this boy went near, Swami again very keenly looked at him, just like he had looked at him before, and changed his life. Swami said, listen, you do not have knack. You have become a crack, Swami said. You have become a crack. And the boy didn't understand. He was completely taken aback. Because he didn't understand why Swami is saying this. He wondered why Swami is admonishing him. Swami is telling you are a crack. He's completely bewildered. Bhagwan went closer to him. And now very gently Swami said, look, if you go on staring at the candle, you will just become a nervous wreck. That is when it struck him what Swami is referring to. He knows everything. He's our master. Every little effort, every little step we take, every time we fall, every time we have faltered, every time we have progressed, every time we have succeeded, everything he knows. And when Bhagwan said that, that's when the boy realized why Swami is telling, if you just do your spiritual sadhana like a machine, you will become a nervous wreck. In fact, that day, Bhagwan in the portico itself started speaking about the Ashtanga Yoga, the Eightfold Path of Yoga, as enumerated by sage Patanjali. And Swami said how before we do any spiritual practice, our foundation has to be very strong. And that is the reason why sage Patanjali emphasized on all those principles, Yama, Niyama. There are 8 paths. Dharana, Dhyana, Samadhi, those are the final 3. So before you do Dhyana, there are so many stages that you have to practice. And Yama, Niyama being the first 2, where one has to spend considerable amount of effort and energy in reigning in one's senses. Only when you do those stages, only when you make effort in that direction, can you lead on to the stages of experiencing the bliss of meditation. Without control of senses and sublimation of desires, there can be no spiritual progress. Without these foundation, if there's any progress, it is no progress. We think it is progress. Because Swami says, removal of immorality is the only way to immortality. So the reason I mentioned this is, Bhagwan says, one of the obstructions in the present for us to experience our reality is dullness of understanding. And more often than not, it happens that we don't understand the import of what the master is saying. When the master says do meditation, we start doing meditation, but we don't go into the depths of it. We don't do the preparatory work for it. And then after that, we will say that, see, I did this and it did not work. And I don't know if what the master says works. It is because of dullness of our understanding, dullness of our intellect, that we create obstacles for ourselves in the spiritual path. What is dhyana? Dhyana is just to ensure that we are in communion. with Bhagwan. There was a boy who was born to a couple 10 years after their marriage, and the mother was an active member of the Sai organization. Every day she used to give the child milk at 6 a.m. and 8 a.m. and medicine at 9 a.m. One day she had to give a talk in a meeting, so she told her mother-in-law that she has prepared everything necessary for the child and it was enough if they were administered at the proper time. And the mother-in-law assured her that she would attend to all the matters related to the child, and the daughter-in-law could go and do her seva without any worry. So when the lady was giving her talk, she was absolutely engrossed in it. She had no thought of the child. And when there was an interval in the talk and she sat down for some time, she watched the clock and it was 9 o'clock, and then that thought came, oh, my mother-in-law, has she given milk to my child at 8 a.m. and has she given medicine at 9 a.m. And those thoughts filled her mind, and she remembered that the previous day at the same time the child was in her lap and she was doing that herself, and just for a few moments her thoughts were fully on that child. And somehow she just got lost thinking about her child. She loved the boy so much because they had got the son after 10 years. So every moment with the child for the mother was very, very precious. And sitting there, the mother just thought about those moments of taking care of the child, fondling the child, and she started smiling. And she just became oblivious of the place and the context, just remembering her child, and she was in her own heaven of being with her little one. The mother completely forgot what she was doing, where she was, because that thought of being with her child was so precious to her and so blissful for her. She was in a state of meditation. I think in simple terms, this is what is meditation. If we can be so lost in our communion with the divine, Sri Ramakrishna Paramahansa was someone who was constantly talking to Mother Kali. Bhagavan used to say, just give up unnecessary thoughts, be in communion with me. You don't need a Japamala, you don't need a Kamandalu. If you are in communion with me, that is enough. Because when we are in such moments of communion, we forget our intellect, we forget what we are. We forget our body. We connect to the divine through Atmabalam, as they say. Once the connection is atmic, then the result is only bliss. Anything, any quality that is inauspicious leaves us. And we experience this during bhajans, isn't it? Sometimes when bhajans are going on, we just forget ourselves. We forget all the petty feelings. We forget our worries. We forget where we are, what is happening to whom in the family. We just forget everything. Just if we can make this moment more permanent, that itself is dhyana. That itself is meditation. So before we start on a spiritual practice like meditation, there are so many things one needs to understand. One needs to put effort to assimilate. And as Bhagwan says, one has to start by first practicing to make the senses not be carried away by things outside. Sealing on desires, control of senses is so vital in the spiritual path. We might have done bhajans for so many years, we might have done seva for decades, but sometimes we may not progress because somewhere we just forgot the fundamentals of these practices. And this is because we are not doing constant inquiry, and as Swami says, it is because of dullness of understanding, dullness of understanding the concept. One more thought that comes to my mind is this concept of upavasa. A lot of people fast, especially in India, the observance of upavasa happens on many festivals and it is a part of the religious calendar. It happens in, it is there in every religion, be it Islam or Christianity. Fasting is so preferred and almost a mandatory ritual in every faith. In Ayurveda, upavasa or fasting is mentioned because that helps the body to recover. It helps the body to repair itself. If once in a while we skip our meals, we forego food, then the body gets that extra time, that extra leeway to stop the usual work that it's always doing, digesting, and take up the repair works. Just like if you're all the time working, you would never get the time to clean your desk and arrange your house. But for 2 days, if you just decide to stop everything that you're doing and do the cleanup, then after that, definitely your desk, your house is in a better shape. And that will prevent and make you more efficient in the days ahead. And it's the same with the body. If every day we are engaging the body with more and more and more food to digest, then the body has absolutely no respite to do anything else. And that is the reason why perhaps our sages and saints, they made it a practice that one should forego food once or twice a month. In the Indian religious calendar, people will not have food on Ekadashi, people will not have food on Purnima. So there are different people who follow different days. But the sages sort of made it a practice that, you know, once in 15 days, once in a month, at least you give the body a little rest. And to make it more a part of our life and living, the sages prescribed some mantra to be chanted. And also, in some places, a warning was given: if you don't do this, then God will not grant your prayers. God will not be pleased. And so these are the ways by which our ancients, without explaining to us the science of it, ensure that we follow these, because ultimately it is good for us, it is good for our physical well-being, mental well-being, spiritual well-being. When students accompany Bhagwan to Kodaikanal and other places, you would see that Swami would feed the boys very well, 3-4 times a day. And Swami never asked the boys to do upavasam. I remember even early in the morning when we would come for darshan, especially on Sundays, you'd be there at 5:30, 6 in the morning, and Swami would still ask, did you have breakfast? Did you complete your upma and idli before coming for darshan? He never said you must skip the breakfast if you are coming for darshan. A lot of people feel they should fast before they go to the mandir, because that way they can get more grace. But here was Bhagwan Swami, which always say that you please have your food and then come to mandir. So when you think about what is upavasa and how oftentimes we have not understood the real purport of it, in the Indian spiritual tradition, there is what is called Swadharma and Paradharma in the Bhagavad Gita. Though people in ordinary terms understand upavasa as foregoing food, Bhagavan says, how can one progress on the spiritual path if you don't have energy? If you are hungry, how can you even sit and do any spiritual practice? And sometimes people become ill, people who are diabetic, people who have acidity, they should not be doing upavasa because that will only hamper their health. And if you don't have a good health, how can you ever do any spiritual practice? So that is when we get stuck to certain these rituals and we don't understand their import, as Swami says, because of dullness of our understanding, and they become obstructions. What would have been a step to take us closer to God actually becomes an obstacle on the path. If we go to the real meaning of upavasa, as Bhagavan has said, Swami says, upa means near and vasa means live. So upavasa means to live near God. Upavasa does not mean forego your breakfast. It does not mean fast. Upavasa does not mean skip your meals. Upavasa means live near God. And what is it that should be near God? It is our soul. It is our thoughts. It's our heart, isn't it? And how can our soul, how can our mind be near God? If your stomach is crying, then you will not be able to think of God. The whole purpose is, we should think about God in such a manner that we don't think about the body at all. The mind is so occupied with thoughts of God, that you are near God, that the body needs are simply overcome. And you are powered by the divine, so nothing will affect you. You are filled with that spiritual power because you are so connected, and the body gets energized. So once a month also, at least, if we seriously forget everything else and we are just in communion with God, then our soul will be so fulfilled, our body will be so energized, because we are connecting to that infinite source. So the whole idea is, at least once a month, experience that closeness with God. And slowly that should become a habit, so that when the time comes of ultimate communion, you have already experienced it, you have known it. Now, very seamlessly, you can become one with Him. You will have no fear, you will have no regret. When the time comes, you will happily become one, because you have been with Him. You are so near. That is the whole purpose of upavasa. But generally, our thoughts are so much on the food, the taste, the stomach. We want to eat more and more tasty stuff, delicious stuff. We don't think about transcending these little pleasures for something much more fulfilling. And upavasa is one step towards that direction. Forget the body. Forget the body by thinking of something much higher. If you can have food and think of the divine, then that is the best way. Because upavasa is to live near God. Upavasa is not to starve you. It is to starve your senses of the flimsy things of the world and to fill it with the bliss of the spirit. There's one incident that happened in Bhagwan's presence. One evening, Swami said that he does not want to eat. Is it because there was any ailment? Was he not feeling well? Was his body not okay? Or is it because the food preparation that day was not pure? Nobody had any idea why Swami did not want to eat food. But the next morning, Swami had food and he had a little more than usual. As usual, he eats very little, but that day he had little more. So there was a senior devotee who had the opportunity to be with Bhagwan during these days. On the third day, this devotee had the chance to do padseva, to sit at his lotus feet and massage his feet. So he picked up some courage and he told Swami, "I have a doubt." Swami said, "You should not have any doubt. Devotee should not have any doubt. Tell me, what is your doubt?" And so this devotee said, "Swami, 2 days ago, you didn't have food, Swami. You said you are not hungry. But the next day, you had more than usual. What is the significance of this, Swami?" Swami said, "Do you think you and I are the same? The way your body functions, the hunger, sleep, and all those bodily needs, do you think my body also is like that? My body can never be troubled by hunger, thirst, and all such bodily needs that any body generally suffers." And Bhagwan went on to explain, "One of the students had committed a sin. So I undertook the fruit of the sin. I took upon myself the consequences of that sin. And so I decided to forego food. I did not want that student to suffer from what he had done. So I just absorbed it, and it is for this reason that I did not have food." And the next day, there was another student who did a good act. "So I had more food than usual, and I ate more out of joy. I wanted this boy who did this good act to lead a very happy and comfortable life, and I wanted to bless him, and so out of joy I ate a little more." Can we ever understand the acts of the divine? As Swami used to say, can the fish ever understand the vastness of the ocean, or the little sparrow understand the infinity of the sky? We in our limited minds try to rationalize and understand the acts of the divine, And that is when they become obstructions for us in our spiritual path. Look at the compassion of the Master. This devotee started shedding tears. He said, Swami, what grace! You are an ocean of mercy. You didn't want that student to suffer from a mistake that he had done, and you wanted to bless, and we never know why you do what. And that is the reason why acceptance, obedience of the teachings of the Master becomes so important. When we are engaged in service, in a service activity, when we are engrossed, when we are engrossed in any service activity, or when we are busy in arranging something for a function in the organization, many times we miss that it is lunchtime. Many times we don't realize that, oh, it is already 12 o'clock. I'm supposed to have lunch, but you're so busy doing that seva. You're so busy engaged in taking care of the sick. You're so busy doing the Narayan seva. You're so busy in that medical camp. You're so busy listening to that satsang that you have forgotten that you're supposed to be having lunch now or supposed to be having dinner now. Those are moments of upavasa, isn't it? Those are moments when you have forgotten, you have transcended the body. The bodily needs didn't bother only. The stomach also forgot that it's supposed to have food. The pangs of hunger also did not show up because something else overpowered our body, bodily needs. And that is what Bhagwan says should be upavasa. It should take us closer and closer to God. So I gave the example of upavasa just for us to understand how Bhagwan says that whatever we do on the spiritual path, if we don't spend that time, don't spend that time in inquiry, then it will become an obstruction. Even though we would have spent years, we would have spent months doing a particular activity, but instead of that taking us closer, it can even become a wall. We will not be able to cross that wall to go on to the next step on the spiritual path. And that is the reason why Swami is saying this dullness of understanding the teachings of the Master, dullness of understanding, which causes confusion because we don't grasp what the Guru has said in the right spirit, will become an obstruction in the present. It will not lead us to understand what our spiritual reality is. Swami used to also give this example how thoughtless people say, what is the point of doing these yajnas? What is the point of doing these yagas, these homams, especially during Dasara, when the Dasara sacrifice happens, where the Purusha Saptaha Jnana Yajna happens? And Swami says, people who have no knowledge, dullness of intellect, such people make such reckless comments, because Swami said, what happens when a farmer sows the field, he's throwing paddy grains on his plot. And a youngster will come and say, what's wrong with this farmer? He's throwing away grains. He could have eaten this. Someone else would have eaten this. That would have given energy. He's so funny. He's a rustic fellow throwing away paddy grains when people are starving. Someone will think like that. But the wise know that from one bag of paddy, one can get 50 bags of paddy. Just from that one bag. So in the same way, everything has so much of significance. People say, how can you pour so much of ghee? How can you pour so many materials, edible things, into the fire? They have no idea about how it fosters the cycle of nature. How the Vedic mantras purify the atmosphere. We will never understand the mysterious cosmic connections that are there all around. And with our limited understanding, we make comments, we pass judgments, and that is what Swami says is dullness of understanding. And many times, out of this dullness, we create for ourselves all these hindrances on the spiritual path, and instead of progressing, we are regressing. So this is the third obstruction, Swami says, the obstruction of the present, attachment to sense objects, cynical criticism, and dullness of understanding. There's one more, and we will take that up in the coming episode. But what is more important, if you see the order, first attachment to sense objects, the whole point of being able to rein in your senses is so important. Because if you are on the spiritual path, there is no shortcut. One has to control one's sense organs. One has to be able to not become a slave of the senses, but have some grip on what the eyes can see, what the ear want to hear, and what the mouth wants to speak. That grip is so important for anyone on the spiritual path. So if you are not able to do that, if you are not putting efforts in that direction, then definitely we are not clearing our path on the way towards God. So it begins with that, and then to not criticize anyone becomes the second step that we have to climb. And third is this, to remove that dullness of understanding, to not try to understand with our limited mind, and be able to accept, be able to be humble, to spend time in study and assimilation, and not superficial understanding of the words of the master. For anyone to progress on the spiritual path, all of these becomes so important. And the whole purpose is, as we discussed, when the final moment comes, that communion with Bhagwan should become easy. That communion should become seamless. Whole life we should have practiced that so well that when the time comes, so effortlessly we become one with Him. Sai, Sai, Smarana Karo, thinking about Swami, thinking constantly about Bhagwan, Smaranam, Nitidhyasanam, Kirtanam, constantly we are doing that, and one day we don't even know that we have become that. And that is the journey of every spiritual aspirant. So we'll continue this in the coming episode, dear listeners. I leave you with this beautiful bhajan. As always, if you have any queries, you can write to listener@radiosai.org or listener@ssmediacenter.org. You can also send us your comments on our WhatsApp number 9393-258-258. Offering this little endeavor at His lotus feet, in all humility, I take your leave. Thank you so much, Sairam.
Sai Sai Smaran Karo.
Sai Sai Smaran Karo.
Kamala.